You are listening to an exclusive podcast from Pituitary World News.
Good morning. This is Dr. Lewis Blevins of Pituitary World News podcasting from the Sea Ranch, California on Saturday, June 13, 2015. A couple of our followers have recently asked me to provide advice on interacting with primary care physicians regarding the complexities of their pituitary diseases. I've given a lot of thought to this daunting task and felt that I could address some of those issues in a podcast, but also want to include a future podcast discussion with my partner and patient, J.D. Fascinetti, who most of you know through Pituitary World News. So let's begin by examining the doctor-patient relationship to try to understand that contract, if you will, even though it's really not truly seen as a contract any longer. I think that's a good starting point for learning how to communicate with a physician. Most of us as patients have expectations of our healthcare providers. We know what we expect based on our prior experiences and the experiences of others we've interacted with, what we see in the media, etc. But physicians have their expectations as well, and that's largely based on experience and what we've been taught and things that we have read in the literature. There's actually a lot of literature about the doctor-patient relationship, how to establish it, maintain it, what to do if it fails, etc. Books have even been dedicated to this particular topic. The doctor-patient relationship is a very nebulous thing. It is a relationship between two or more people, patients and their families, for example, doctors and their co-workers and staff, etc. And it's like all other relationships, whether those be between spouses, parents, your children, friends, colleagues, co-workers, associates, or what have you. As in all relationships, work is required, a lot of work. Work not only to establish and to maintain, but also to, in some cases, end a relationship that's dysfunctional for one reason or another. Just as in other relationships, the doctor-patient relationship is centered on trust and communication, respect, and a whole host of other words that can be used to describe a positive interaction between human beings. It also involves recognition of some of the relationship killers out there, perhaps the strongest one being that of contempt. So when a patient has contempt for his or her physician, or a physician has contempt for a patient, that's a relationship that's going to fail. So it's important to avoid contempt and also to recognize the early seeds of it and to kill those seeds before they establish themselves and lead to a dysfunctional relationship where no one benefits. I think of the doctor-patient relationship as a bi-directional relationship, as it should be. As in other relationships, we all bring our past and what we recognize as norms, and certainly that's different for every individual, into the doctor-patient relationship. For example, the experiences you had as a child with your pediatrician probably influenced the way you deal with your physician as an adult. The way in which you saw your family members deal with health and illness and fear related to such, and the joys of success of finding health probably also affect the way you interact with your physician. And these same things affect the way physicians interact with patients based on our own experiences in the same. I guess what I'm trying to say is that every single person looks at the doctor-patient relationship differently, and sometimes the most important thing to do is to set expectations and understand what is to come from the establishment of such a relationship. For example, some physicians see themselves simply as a consultant to provide information or advice to a primary physician. Other physicians want to assume care. When you're dealing with pituitary endocrinologists, many of us want to be protective and assume the care of our patients, but we also have the role of providing advice and in many ways making a final determination as to whether a patient has a disease or not. And we're accustomed to doing so, and that might lead to us coming across as crass or strong-willed or strongly opinionated to the patient who's seeking answers if we don't make ourselves clear as to why we hold the opinions we do about a particular medical case and its related facts. So as a patient, you have to figure out, where's the physician coming from? How do they see their role in your particular bit of healthcare needs that are to be acquired through interacting with that physician? Now, the one thing that most physicians know through experience, maybe they haven't cognized it, or brought it to the level of consciousness is what I mean to say, and most patients don't know this, is that the doctor-patient relationship is one that operates on a sliding scale. Let me use a couple of examples to explain that. So if you present to the emergency room with crushing chest pain and have a low blood pressure and an abnormal EKG indicating that you're having a heart attack, the doctor takes full control of that doctor-patient relationship and does whatever is necessary to keep you alive. And as the patient, you are totally passive in that situation. You want that physician and that healthcare team to do everything possible to save your life so that you can live another day and in the future participate in health. Now, perhaps it's not that dire of a set of consequences, and you have chest pain and you show up in the emergency room and the doctor says, well, it could be your heart. We need to do these tests. The EKG might be a little bit abnormal. How about a cardiac catheterization? And then you're involved in that discussion. So the relationship is now one where the physician might provide strong guidance, and you as the patient can either accept that or not. But it might be in your best interest to listen to what the physician is saying. On the other extreme, let's say you have hypertension and or diabetes mellitus, and there's a family history maybe of heart disease, and you happen to be a smoker, and you go see your primary physician, and they counsel you to stop smoking. In this case, the physician is simply providing information, and you, the patient, are in total control of the situation. You have to decide whether you want to stop smoking, and if so, develop an action plan, set it in motion, and accomplish the goal. So as you can see, there's these extremes of the doctor having all of the control and the patient having all the control. The truth be told, most of the time, it's somewhere in the middle, where there's an appropriate interaction between a physician and a patient to achieve the healthcare goals that you have and that your physician may have. And that's where all of the knowledge about relationships and communication and working through problems and all of that stuff really comes into play. Now, keep in mind, as a patient, the doctor-patient relationship will move throughout time. So maybe you're a newly diagnosed patient with acromegaly. You're dependent on that physician to guide you and to help you make treatment decisions so that you can resolve the acromegaly and the consequences of such and live a normal life expectancy free of all of the complications that come with acromegaly. But as you go through the course of treatment, and maybe you've been rendered disease-free or you're controlled with medication, that doctor-patient relationship becomes more of a relationship that you're in control of, where you have to take your medications or show up for follow-ups or have your MRIs, so that I hope you can understand that that is a sliding scale and it does move throughout the course of a relationship that a doctor and a patient have with one another, and it can become more intense according to the needs. Maybe your tumor recurs, for example, and the physician's going to be in more in control of taking care of seeing that you get appropriate treatment. Throughout all of this, and I keep coming to this, bidirectional communication is essential. Doctors and patients must talk to one another, but perhaps more importantly, they must listen to one another. Communication must be succinct. Most physicians are under pressure to see a lot of patients. And obviously, in some cases, patients have other things to do as well. I've had plenty of patients say, hey, I only have 10 minutes, let's get moving. So it works both ways. Believe it or not, most physicians are educated and have spent many, many years training and acquiring information and experience in managing patients. It may not seem that way. There are a lot of you out there who've spent years trying to get an appropriate diagnosis and have lost respect for your physicians because they didn't see it. But you have to remember, these are complex, rare, unusual disease processes where most physicians don't see a single patient with pituitary disease in their training. To give you an example, I went through 4 years of medical school, and it wasn't until my second year of residency that I first saw a patient with pituitary tumor. I encountered that patient simply because he had unusual headaches and visual disturbances. MRI scanners had just been installed at the facility where I was training. And I told the patient, well, if you've got headaches and visual problems, I want to put you in this new scanner. And the radiologist called me and said he had a pituitary tumor. And it wasn't on my radar screen. Had I not seen that patient, I'm not sure I would have ever developed an interest in pituitary diseases. And I can tell you that most physicians who have finished an internal medicine training program probably have never seen or at least recognized a patient with a pituitary tumor. So even though physicians are intelligent and experienced and well-trained, they're not omniscient. And unfortunately, society expects us as physicians to be omniscient. At the same time, they expect us to know our limitations. So unfortunately, that's a catch-22 for the doctor. And as a result, many physicians feel less than satisfied about their ability to make some of these diagnoses. Patients are disappointed that the delays took so long. And I think that a lot of the difficulties in subsequent communications result in this particular arena, sort of the disappointment about a delay in diagnosis or misdiagnosis, for example. But keep in mind that physicians are well-skilled, they are experienced, but they haven't seen everything. So as a patient, one of the things you can do to communicate more effectively with your physician is be open, honest, straightforward, give them a pass if they make a mistake. None of us are perfect. We're all human beings. We all make mistakes. And sometimes those mistakes cost someone pain and suffering, for example. But I think that in my experience, when I see patients who've seen primary physicians who have not diagnosed their condition in a timely fashion, patients hold on to that anger. And that anger is only going to destroy the particular patient and lead to some difficulties in recovery from illness. It's okay to be angry, but the sooner you dismiss with it and move. One of the roles of a physician in the evaluation and management of patients is to seek answers and find truths and determine relevance. So we, by virtue of how systems work and we consider diagnoses and differential diagnoses and associated complications and consequences, have learned to recognize disease patterns and establish a method or a way of gaining additional and more information. This may be a wrong approach because we might not ask all the right questions, but we tend to ask questions from our experience that seem to be relevant in a particular situation. What I'm driving at here is that not all physicians understand the relevance. For example, I saw a patient who was referred to me for abnormal thyroid functions, but I walk in the examination room and she obviously has Cushing's syndrome, and her medical history was characterized by abnormal weight gain, hypertension, glucose intolerance, hypercholesterolemia, and she had a red face. So the thyroid functions were interesting and unusual and related to her pituitary tumor. So they were very relevant, but the physician didn't know the underlying diagnosis and understand how they were relevant. The physician just determined the patient needed to see an endocrinologist and didn't put the rest of the whole picture together. I will say, however, that physician learned about Cushing's syndrome through that particular patient and the experience, and they were rather shocked to get a call from an endocrinologist who was asked to see a patient for abnormal thyroid functions and learned the patient had a pituitary tumor producing ACTH overdriving of the adrenal glands causing Cushing syndrome, and explaining all of the medical problems that the patient had been treated for the past 7 years. Now, that does not mean that that physician wasn't a good physician and doesn't deserve to continue to be involved in that particular patient's care. Again, these are rare diseases, and the physician didn't understand the relevance of the abnormal thyroid functions in this. Understandably, a patient would be disappointed. It's that patient's disappointment that leads to the contempt and a breakdown in communication and further difficulty with the doctor-patient relationship and subsequent lack of good or appropriate health care when it's best needed. So one way to deal with your primary physician is try to avoid being disillusioned or disappointed, and recognize that medicine is very complex and requires practice and learning, and physicians are doing that from the day they receive their MD degree until the day they retire. It's often been said that if you listen, the patient will tell you what's wrong with them. So physicians need to listen better and pay attention to the symptoms and signs of the disease process. The good news about endocrinology is that we have laboratory studies and other tests, radiological studies, for example, that can support or refute a clinical impression that we may have. For example, my patient with headaches and visual loss might have had a normal MRI of the brain that would have refuted the fact that there was something intracranially causing those two symptoms and signs. I had a recent patient who'd had some hypertension and low bone mineral density and a high urine cortisol, who was under a lot of stress and did not look Cushing weight at all, but was referred for a diagnosis of possible Cushing syndrome, had a totally normal salivary cortisol profile, normal ACTH levels, normal cortisol levels, and thus does not have Cushing syndrome. So data can be useful to either support or refute a clinical impression. Just as the physician has to listen to the patient, I think the patients must listen to the physicians. And when an experienced clinician renders either a diagnosis or lack of a diagnosis, if you're not entirely happy with that, go get a second opinion. That does not mean that that's a terrible physician or a poor physician. It means that you probably don't have the disease. So patients have to be good listeners as well. And believe me, there are a lot of patients who aren't good listeners. I've had a number of people come to me, "You're the seventh endocrinologist I've seen," they'll say, "and I think that you're the one who can help me." That is no way to start a doctor-patient relationship. That patient usually is a doctor shopper, and usually that's a patient who's not listening, especially if they've been pronounced as disease-free from the prior six endocrinologists. So try not to be a doctor shopper. Try to listen. Try to accept what a physician is saying. And if you can't accept it or don't believe it, get a second opinion. Maybe a third opinion, but generally once you've had three opinions, if there's concordance on at least two of those, you've got your answer. There's also a lot of literature of, I guess what we could best call difficult patients, and it classifies what physicians and healthcare providers refer to as the difficult patient, and I'll go through some of that in a moment. The first thing I'll say is that there are difficult doctors, and I will be the first to admit that. There are plenty of physicians out there who should have never been awarded an MD degree and should have been run out of practice years ago. So I'm not in any way defending practitioners of the art of medicine or the science of medicine or what have you, because there are plenty of difficult doctors out there as well who wreak havoc and cause problems for a lot of patients and referring physicians, believe it or not. Some patients are labeled as difficult patients because they either have bipolar disorder or psychiatric disease or alcoholism or drug use. Guess what? So do a lot of doctors. And those same traits that some people use to characterize difficult patients are true in the physicians. And if you spot those things in your physician, find another doctor. No point in arguing, no point in trashing that physician online. Just move on as fast as you can and find a good doctor who doesn't have psychiatric problems or alcohol or drug abuse. So it's important to remember that doctors are people too, and we're not immune to the things that affect people. We get sick. We might have depression. Plenty of physicians do have alcohol and drug abuse, and those physicians clearly should be removed from the practice of medicine. But there might be a death in the family, or a sick pet, or a sick child, or something that affects the way that physician is able to practice medicine on a particular day or over a short period of time. And sometimes, as a patient, you need to be empathetic towards your physician, because we suffer too, for lots of different reasons. And it's no easy task to be a physician where you're dealing with people who have problems all the time. You know, that can wear on physicians and lead to a lot of physician burnout. Oncologists, for example, cardiologists, patients, or physicians who have patients who have a high mortality rate, for example, that's very difficult for physicians in the long run and can affect the doctor-patient relationship that you have with your particular physician. So try to be a little understanding that doctors are human. All right, so if you do your research on difficult patients, and it's worth doing a Google search on that and trying to learn, the thing that I would say is that as a patient, and this goes for me too because I have a doctor, you need to find the doctor who best works for you. And if they're a difficult doctor, find a different doctor. The other thing that you're control in is whether you become a difficult patient. And that's where I think looking at this idea of what constitutes or what medically and professionally is thought as a difficult patient can be useful. Because if you're not a difficult patient, you're going to get along better with your doctor. And I ran across something, I believe this is from my own institution. Dr. David Elkin put together a presentation, and he talks about the ideal patient and describes that patient as cooperative, grateful, uncomplaining, trusting, undemanding, cheerful, who works to get better. And the ideal caregiver is someone who loves all, knows all, cures all, comforts all, facilitates the problem solving for patients, and develops a problem list and a plan and puts it into action for all. Now, obviously, ideal patients and ideal caregivers are not anything more than a pipe dream or a fantasy, because no one's perfect and no one can meet every sort of requirement in those two short lists. They quote a study by Han, H-A-H-N, and others, published in the Journal of General Internal Medicine in 1996, stating that 15% of patients in a primary care clinic were considered to be difficult patients. And in this particular study, they would tend to be older women, chronic medical problems, needing multiple visits and tests, and on multiple medications. This is the data. I'm not making this up. But some of the hateful patients or difficult patients that were identified were those who were the dependent clingers, the entitled demanders, the manipulative help rejectors, and the self-destructive deniers. And I will say that these are personality profiles that physicians encounter. And it leads to, if you will, a wall, or maybe even that contempt that a physician might have. You know, how many times can the dependent clinger send a message through the electronic record or the email or call the office before the physician is going to start rolling his or her eyes because the assistant says that This particular patient has called 5 times today and has called again. Or the entitled demander who calls or emails and demands this or demands that or wants this particular test or wants the labs reviewed or the MRI reviewed instead of a visit to do so. The manipulative help rejectors who come for advice and then don't take it and come for a diagnosis and then sort of reject that and publicly trash that physician on the online evaluations just because the physician didn't agree with the patient. You know, we've all seen those. And then there are the self-destructive deniers who continue to do things like use drugs and smoke tobacco and not take their medications and are in denial. And physicians recognize these profiles, and that leads to some difficulty in the doctor-patient relationship. So if you want to get along with your primary physician or your endocrinologist or whatever, don't become one of those difficult patients. Recognize those types and try not to sort of trigger, if you will, the physician to sort of have a response based on recognition that you might be one of those patient types. Now, that's not to say don't be an advocate for yourself. I think that that's very important as a patient, is to be a self-advocate. Most of you with pituitary diseases know far more about your pituitary situation than your primary physician. And unfortunately, some of you know more than your endocrinologist. But that's where you can become the educator, and you can teach your doctor and teach the healthcare professionals that are associated with your doctor about your disease process. And that's where you look out for yourself, but you do that in a confident way without being belittling or without being pedantic towards the healthcare provider, such as, well, you're the doctor, you should know this. You know, I can't tell you how many times I've heard patients express that attitude towards their referring physician. And it is counterproductive in the long run. Just be grateful that you were challenged with a rare disease and were able to learn something about that. By now, some of you are probably saying, gee, this was interesting, while others are saying, this is a bunch of nonsense, and I'm just speaking freely about this particular issue because it's important to me as a physician. It's important to my patients as well. But I think I would summarize by saying that for a successful doctor-patient relationship, bidirectional communication, mutual respect, listening, talking, all of that's extremely important. The relationship has to be dynamic. Physicians have to be willing to respond to new information. Patients have to be willing to take the advice of the physician and take their medications or show up for an examination or a test or what have you. It should be ever-changing, and that, you know, for example, if a patient's not doing well on thyroid hormone alone, maybe they need T3, and the physician and the patient both need to be willing to accept that, or maybe they need to be on armor thyroid preparation or something like that, or perhaps testosterone injections aren't working and the patient should be on a gel. There are a lot of different scenarios I could use where the relationship has to be dynamic in a two-way street of, oh, that's not working, let's try this. And if something's not working, it doesn't mean the physician doesn't know what they're doing. It just means your biology is different from every other patient, and the physician has to work with you to work what's best for you. It's also important to recognize that physicians do run out of options, and sometimes there's nothing more we can do, and that we have to send you back to your primary physician to sort out what might be the underlying cause, because it's not always your hormones. And I think another way to get along better with your physician is to understand that just because you have an endocrine disease, you may have something else too that's contributing to your poor sense of well-being, and it is not always your hormones. So be open to that possibility. Keep your appointments. Show up on time. Show up early so that you can be seen on time. Accept the fact that if the physician's running behind, it's because someone else required maybe a little more time than they were allotted. But if you're the one who's sick, I'm sure your physician will give you the time that you require when in need. Ask questions. Answer questions. Educate your physicians. Be educated by your physicians. If it doesn't work out, find a new doctor. If you have to fire a doctor or a doctor fires you as a patient, move on. Think of that as a gift, just as if it were an impending divorce that was granting you freedom from a abusive or difficult marriage. And if you find a really good doctor, consider that to be a nugget of gold and work to maintain an appropriate, mutually rewarding, successful doctor-patient relationship, just as you would work to maintain a friendship or a marriage or a good relationship with a family member. Write things down if you can't remember them. Do this during the doctor's visit. Ask the doctor if you can tape record the visit. Write things down before you show up if you have questions. There's a lot of research indicating that patients can only remember just a few bits of information that the physician will provide. So ask for resources. Use Pituitary World News as a resource to learn more information about your disease process. But ask for written materials or websites or do your Google searches. But be careful what you read on the internet because you can't always trust that information. By the same token, don't overwhelm your physician. You know, the patient who shows up with a list of 30 complaints, the first thing the physician's going to do is to look through those and determine relevance. What might be related to this patient's pituitary disease or this patient's thyroid function, for example? So the physician might only want to address 4 or 5 of your 30 complaints or your list of 30 questions because we sort through the relevance pretty quickly based on many countless hours of experience. So understand that the physician might not address all of your concerns there during one visit. And sometimes it's best to have several visits to address all the particular concerns as well. Just as patients can't remember everything, physicians can't deal with everything in a short 15 minutes. So I guess what I'll say in closing is that it takes a lot of work to become a physician, and it takes a lot of work to communicate effectively and to achieve a desired goal of an interaction between two people. So it's going to take a lot of work as a patient. So learn about some of these difficult patient types and learn about effective communication strategies and recognize the limitations and the wonderful benefits of a doctor-patient relationship and read about doctor-patient relationships and better prepare yourself to be a patient and to interact with a physician much as you would say go through, you know, do your own therapy to sort of interact better with your spouse. So do some therapy and some reading to interact better with your doctors and ask your doctor to do the same because believe me, physicians need to work on some of these things as well. All right, that's it for now. I think in the near future, as I mentioned, J.D. Fascinetti and I will have a conversation and hopefully some of you can glean some of the insights into our particular doctor-patient relationship. And take those to your very own doctor-patient relationships.